Okay, if you could start the recording, we're back. So we've got the ICANN registrar. They've actually undergone a title change. That's correct. The registrar relations group. Tim, well, you guys can introduce yourselves because there's folks on the phone. So I will turn it over to Tim Cole and let him introduce himself and his team for those that are in the room and on the phone, and we'll get going.
Thanks, Matt. I'm Tim Cole, and I work with the Registrar Relations team. I think I know pretty much all of you, and probably even the folks on the phone, I hope. We're just going to give a brief update on the kinds of activities that we've been seeing and are involved in our team at the present time. And Steve is going to talk a little bit about the accreditation process and what's going on with that. What are we doing now with new applicants and how many and where they're coming from, that sort of thing. Then I'm going to ask Mike to talk a little bit about some of the programs that he's involved with and maybe give some updates on some of those, and all three of us are here for questions if you have any. So I think we're on until Kurt gets here. So we'll take it like that. And I'll turn it over to Steve to start with.
Thank you, Tim. So for those of you who don't know me yet, I'm Steve Gobin. I'm part of the Registrar Relations team. I am based at the Brussels office of ICANN. So I'm going to start with a small overview of the new applications. Just to say that it's now coming from all over the world. We receive an average of an application a week. The only country from which we receive more applications than the average is from China. 11 applications in 2011, for example, versus 3 in 2010, so a big increase on that front. For the rest, it's really coming from all over the world, including that I recently accredited registrars in countries where these registrars were the first, which is also a good thing. Recent changes were made to the accreditation process last year and the year before. We started by re-updating the content on the ICANN website related to accreditations to make it more clear for any potential registrar applicant. We also created terms and conditions to better define the rights and obligations behind the application process. And most of all, we are now processing, it has been the case for almost a year now, we are processing additional due diligence checks on new applicants. We check, for example, if the applicant and the key people of the applicant have any criminal records, or bad financial records, so that we can ensure better that we don't accredit a bad company or a company with a person having a bad record. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, I failed to mention before, Steve Gobin works out of our Brussels office and handles the accreditation applications, among other things. And now Mike is working out of our Boston office, which I think is in your living room? Or
it's my kitchen.
In your kitchen, that's right. Okay, and so I'm going to turn it over to him to give an update.
All right. Thanks, Tim. So recently my role has kind of been a little bit more cleanly defined, so I'm primarily responsible for new registrar programs, which generally involves implementing consensus policies or creating new policies with the lowercase p that we use on staff for things like transitioning deaccredited registrars' names and other sorts of programs and procedures that are intended to both protect registrants and also foster a competitive environment for the registrar marketplace. So among the things that I'm working on right now, a couple I think that are probably of the most interest to registrars are the registrar training program, which probably a good number of the people in this room have already completed, and then the implementation of the post-expiration domain name, recovery consensus policy. It's PEDNR, in our common parlance, so I sometimes forget what the PEDNR stands for. Anyhow, I'll give you a quick update on the training program. I think a lot of the people here I remember seeing in our recent regional gathering in Los Angeles, and I gave a little update there, and I'll sort of give an updated update so that everybody gets the most recent statistics here. So just as background, and I'll try and keep this brief since most of you probably already know, but under the 2009 Registrar Accreditation Agreement, all registrars are required to participate in an online training program that's created by ICANN that was done in consultation with registrars. And so we went through all of that creation and consultation process, and it was a pretty lengthy thing, but we came out with what I think is a pretty comprehensive program that includes all of the really key provisions of the Registrar Accreditation Agreement and the consensus policies where we see the most sorts of compliance issues. So that's been live since about October of last year, and we have now enrolled all registrars who are on the 2009 RAA in the program. So as of right now, that's about 965 registrars. To date, we have about 63 1/3% of registrars have completed the training program, which is up about 3% from my presentation in May, so we're still making progress. I think maybe one thing of interest is that the program is offered in 7 languages, and that 1/3 of the people taking the course are taking it in a language other than English. Hopefully our translations were good and that people are finding value in that. But that's, we're really doing our best to reach out to, registrars who maybe don't have the close contact with ICANN that a lot of the people in this room do. So we also have perhaps of interest, our compliance team at ICANN also. Every one of them has taken the training program. That was one of Maggie Sarad's requests, or I guess it's a requirement of her staff that they all new staff take the training program, and all existing staff has taken it. And so one of the other things that we've done, and we've had a number of registrars ask us, can I have a few more people at my company take the training? I found value in it. I would like, for example, my transfer team, I would like them to take the course, or I've got other people on staff to take it. And so what we've been doing is we've been allowing registrars on sort of a trial basis to sign up additional employees to take the course. And so by trial, what I mean is that we're allowing registrars up to 10 extra accounts into the training program, and the additional learners in the system from each registrar don't count toward the compliance requirement. It's just really for their own value. And registrars who sign up for this have the ability to monitor the progress. So if they want to make sure that their employees are actually completing the training, they can. We can create an administrative account for them to do that. So to date, we've had 17 registrars, or in some cases, their families of registrars, and I didn't count the families as 100. So there have been 17 registrars or families of registrars who have signed up for this. And we haven't really widely spread the word about it because we're still kind of in this trial phase. But by all means, I would welcome anybody who's interested to either see me here or just send a note to registrar-training@icann.org if you'd like to sign up. And so we've had a total of about 83, what we call voluntary learners in the program. So I think that, I think the result is that we're getting sort of a better educated and more compliant general marketplace. So I think that's a good thing. Ultimately, our goal is to make this not a trial program, but what we're finding is that most registrars don't usually need more than 10 accounts. So we may just sort of stop calling it a trial and open up the invitation and say anybody who's interested, let us know. But that's sort of the case now. We just haven't, as I said, we just haven't broadcast it. So that's where we are at the training program. And then just a really quick update on the PEDNR. So this went through the GNSO policy development process, and the working group came up with a series of, depending on how you count them, 13 or 18 recommendations, basically dealing with what happens to a domain name once it expires. And the general intent was to make sure that registrants are better informed and that there's some level of predictability in there. You know, I think there's a pretty good understanding that registrars aren't all going to adhere to exactly the same practices. It's a competitive marketplace, and so this is one way that registrars differentiate themselves. But there was just an intent that, there's sort of a minimum standard of what registrants can expect will happen when their domain expires. And some of these things are sort of common sense, like sending renewal notices before the name expires and sending information about how to renew the name after it expires if it's still available for renewal. So there was a, and this is something sort of new, there's an implementation review team that's mostly people from that original working group on the GNSO. And so they've been working with me mostly to sort of shape how this is going to be implemented. And so, I'm in the process of sort of drafting up what those recommendations from the GNSO were and turning them into a policy that's something that looks a little bit more like contract language that would be more cleanly enforceable. And then the process would be, after we've, internally on staff all sort of vetted this thing, we'll take it back to that implementation review team and say, is this really what the GNSO had intended when it brought this policy about? And if not, how do we make it more true to the intention? And then from there, if we need to make revisions, we will. And then, of course, there'll be a public posting and public comment and go through the traditional cycle of that. And if necessary, make any changes. And then that's how a bill becomes law. So that's kind of the short version. And that's where we are right now. I'd be happy to take any questions, but Marika is here from our policy team. So if you've got really specific questions about the policy or the process, she'd probably be a better resource in terms of how it kind of got to the implementation state, the real policy development work. So she's going to speak a little bit later, so I won't say too much more about that. But just kind of merging my two topics here, the training program doesn't currently talk about the PEDNR because it didn't exist when we created it. There's also been a couple of amendments to the inter-registrar transfer policy since we implemented the training program. And so the plan is we're going to update the training program all at once. We're going to put PEDNR in there and the transfer policy changes. There's already a disclaimer at the beginning saying, this is current as of when we did it, but keep in mind things change. And so we're aware that people are eager to get the new information about these sorts of things in the training program. But considering most people have already taken it, it probably doesn't matter much. But we will send out notes to everybody in the training system when there's new content added. So if people are interested in learning about what changes have been made, they'll be able to log back in and retake that section of the transfer policy or just the subsection. So if they're, want to get those changes, they'll be able to do that. So I think that's about it for me. If there are any questions for any of us, I'd be happy to entertain that now.
Adam? Quick question for Steve. You mentioned that you guys have had some registrars that were, you had new registrars in new countries. Are you able to talk about what countries those were?
I don't have the list in front of me, but...
Sorry, to clarify, I think you said new countries where no registrars had shown up before. So,
for example, I recently accredited two in Honduras. A bit before, I accredited the first one in Morocco. There was also an East European country, I think Bulgaria or Romania. Not sure by head which one. Right now, I'm handling an application from South Africa. It will be the second one in that country. Same for Lithuania. Now you can always check the list on the Internic website, and you can sort out the list by country, and you will definitely see there that there are countries you didn't see before.
Yeah, I actually have a similar question, Steve, maybe. What percentage of folks that apply don't get accredited? Or have you, is there... Yeah. Is it...
No, I think I'll answer this one because actually I'm the final person to sign off on the applications. But essentially no one gets to the point of sign-off that is not qualified. So we don't actually have, you know, raw statistics of how many get turned down. Basically, there is usually a problem either with, you know, a principal associated with the registrar applicant that is not qualified based on the policy, and or financial or other terms. And so we tell them you need to do this, or you need to satisfy this, or you need to change this before we can consider you for accreditation, and then they usually go away. And or they fix it and come back. But so it's a little hard to say, you know, we don't really have a list of no's because we don't really get to the point of no. I mean, you know, we just tell them we can't proceed, basically.
Okay. No, thanks, Tim. James?
Thanks. So a question regarding the implementation review team and some of the new policies that are coming out. First, are there any registrars that are on the IRT? Because I remember that being thrown around, but I don't know, is anyone there? No, so who are they?
Identify yourselves.
So sorry, I guess what is the...
Exactly.
I was waiting to have you finish and say IRTP, but yeah. So what is the IRT? Because I'm not...
And then a second question is, and I see Marika in the back. We may need you to come to the microphone if you have a moment, please, because I know that that will help shed some light on this. So the question is, where's the IRT? Who are the registrar participants? Are they meeting regularly, and what's on their agenda? And then the second one is, how does that play or overlap with the Standing Committee on Improvements, which I think one is... I'm getting confused here. Because we're on one. Krista and I represent us on the Standing Committee for Improvements, but I don't know who's on the IRT.
So what do you mean with IRT, the Implementation Review Team?
Yeah.
But that specifically relates to the recommendations of the Post-Expiration Domain Name Recovery PDP. So basically that was a group that was created as well on the recommendation of the working group itself that should be there to provide, you know, liaison with staff in case there would be questions on, you know, what was intended with the recommendations, or if there would be, you know, small details regarding how to implement certain things to consult back on those issues. And I think
so
Michaela is on there.
We all just now had our aha moment.
Yeah? Okay, good.
That yes, we do remember that. That was a temporary thing. I think that the way it was described there just a moment ago, it sounded like there was this other body that nobody knew about. So,
okay.
Yes,
no,
I remember that now. Thank you.
And as I understand, there have been some exchanges on the mailing list, indeed asking for some clarifications on some issues, and I'm assuming that, you know, once there's a draft implementation plan, that will be shared with that team as well, probably before that gets...
But once PEDNR recommendations are implemented, that just evaporates. That goes away. Okay, thanks.
Exactly.
This would probably be a good time to augment this discussion a little bit. As all of you know, we recently implemented the first set of IRTP Part B changes that included the creation of the Transfer Emergency Action Contact, the TAC, and also the obligation of a losing registrar to send an FOA during the transfer process. It was optional before. It's now obligatory. And then there's a couple language pieces. But there are more changes coming. There's been quite a bit of activity at the GNSO level with regard to transfer policy. There's another set of recommendations that have been approved for Part B that we will be putting into the implementation stage soon, which will consist of us determining what exactly... they're back. Basically, it's exact language, so there isn't a lot for us to determine what needs to change or what... you know, what needs to go out in terms of an implementation process. But so this will be one of these where we'll need to determine what's a reasonable length of time to give to the registrars. I think we'll probably consult this time with maybe the XCOM or whatever, just to get sort of a feeling for, you know, is this a 60-day, is this a 90-day, is this a 30-day preparation period necessary based on the extent of the changes that may be required. So those have already been approved, and then there's more coming from the Part C group. So it's, you know, whereas in the past we might go 4 or 5 years without any changes to announce to all the registrars and to implement, now we seem to be having something every couple months or so. So I just want to caution you to be sure to keep your
lines open with ICANN and make sure that your primary contact information is up to date, so that when we send out these notices, there's no, you know, there's no real question that you get them and that you know about them. So that's just one thing I wanted to say. I think Marika will talk during her session a little more about what the nature of some of the things that are coming down are. Any other questions for any of us?
Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
Well, yeah, actually, I just wanted to ask what kind of changes are coming through now, but if that is something Marika was doing later on, I can wait on.
Any other questions for Tim, Mike, or Steve? Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Mike has one more.
Okay, sorry, sure.
Just one more thing. So Steve Sheng of staff asked me to make a plug for a working group. I'm not sure if working group is the right term because it's not a GNSO initiative, but as you may have seen on the ICANN site posted about a week ago, there was a request for people to volunteer on this variants in the root project. And so, they're looking for, and so I'll just tell you what they're sort of looking for. It's not necessarily the usual suspects, and so, it may be that you have somebody, you know, within your organization who might like to kind of get involved in ICANN. This might be sort of a good thing for the right kind of person. So I'll just sort of tell you what he suggested to me the right kind of person might look like. And he asked me just to give him some names, so if he doesn't get enough volunteers, watch out. But so they're looking for people who have experience in EPP technology and operations, registrant interfaces, registry interfaces, being an interface to ICANN contractual compliance. And by the way, I think when he says registrant and registry interface, I think he means people, not the control panel. So if you're, you know, if you're a person who deals with registries, or if you're a person who deals with registrants, and a person who deals with ICANN contractual compliance, and finally, experience with dispute resolution. So if you know of people who might fall into one or more of those categories, they're looking for you. And so just check the, I know a lot of stuff got posted recently to the site, but I think it was just last week that this announcement went up saying we're looking for volunteers. And I think that, for people who enjoy this kind of technical stuff, I think it might actually be kind of fun. So
we'll send the link around for that announcement.
All right. So I've done my job here, and I made the plug for that.
Cool. Thanks, Mike. Also, just like to say that we missed Mr. Cole at the last ICANN meeting, so it's good to have him back and give him a round of applause for... What was your streak? How many in a row?
That was the first one in the almost 8 years that I've been in this job, so... thank you very much. I can see now, and my back is doing better. So thank you all.
So I guess are we waiting for Kurt? Okay, we can wait. Tim, one subject that did come up that I wonder if you or the team might be able to talk to is what sort of operational plans you guys are putting in place in the anticipation of new TLDs, and what areas do you think need to be looked at in terms of streamlining the process for specifically registrars? Obviously, when we start to have the opportunity to become accredited for hundreds of new GTLDs, are we working on a process that streamlines that? And that was one of the topics that had come up with the group. And I know it might be a little premature to have a lot of specifics around that, but I just thought in the time as we're waiting for Kurt, maybe we could just have a conversation about that.
Thanks. That's a good topic to cover. A lot of the activities that we have been undertaking within our part of the organization has been to enhance a lot of the automated or electronic processes, where we're working on automating the accreditation application, for example, because we expect an influx of those kinds of applications. But we're also, trying to go to a paperless system and working with our application folks. There's still some question about what the status of appendices will be once we have, a few hundred or a thousand TLDs and over 1,000 or 1,000 plus registrars. Suddenly, the
complexity of that is quite enormous. And so our goal is to either find a process that satisfies the contractual requirement, but that actually doesn't require a lot of paper to fly around. We've got applications looking at possibility of, you know, just creating sort of an online form with all of the TLDs, and you just go in and check which ones you want, and then somehow that becomes an authorizing process, for example. But we're also talking, and I suppose this will, you know, you guys have been having discussions about the RA amendments, but of course that is removing that whole appendix requirement is a key key amendment that all parties are in agreement with. But you know that may not happen soon enough. So we need to prepare for both contingencies. So we're definitely plus we've been in. There has been a group that I don't know how active it's been recently, but you know that was made up of some registries and some registrars and someone from our registry and Mike from my department here that were talking about some of the potential means of doing some of this stuff. So, you know, we've been staying on top of that as well. We've been doing a lot of streamlining. We modified the data escrow process a bit so that not the formal policy or program, but we now, whenever a new registrar is approved, they, in addition to signing the RAA, they have to sign their RDE contract. So they are already immediately enrolled in the RDE, or they have to enroll with a third party. But either way, they have to do it before we will finalize their approval. And then we now have a mechanism for tracking exactly when they hit a certain number of names, and then we will say, you're obligated to start filing now. I mean, I think we give them 60 names or something before we say, your obligation starts. But it's not 1,000 names before the obligation starts. So some of those things are just designed to make sure that as things get more complex, we don't have to increase our staff commensurate with the size of the increased responsibilities, as long as we can automate more things and create to do things more smartly. But we'd love to hear from folks about the kinds of things that you think, you know, we should be doing and that we need to be doing, because we can't guarantee that. Can't guarantee that we'll think of everything. So, obviously, if you guys have concerns or ideas or thoughts, please share them with us.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. And I think from our standpoint, any sort of improvements on the paper side of things, and also, you know, I've said before, I think that, you know, trying to do more stuff in the radar system and make that more interactive and useful, which it's, we're already starting to do that. So, you know, as you're gearing up and doing this stuff, if you need feedback and input from the group, just, I think folks would be more than willing to provide it, because obviously it's going to benefit us in the long run.
And, you know, I mean, we created Radar on our watch here, and we did it in large part to be a resource for registrars. And for registrar applicants, but that part of it hasn't ever been fully developed. But meanwhile, you know, the company is continuing to look at different sort of contact management systems and things like that, and they consider sometimes replacing Radar with some system like that. But until that happens, you know, we're committed to making it as useful and helpful as possible. So if you have recommendations or requests, please let us know. I mean, I can't say that we'll get to it overnight, because we're competing with a lot of others for limited resources, especially in our IT development area. But it would be really good to hear if in your time using Radar you've discovered something that would really be helpful but isn't there, or that it's there but it's not as easy to use or something. Please let us know, and we'll take a look at it.
Great. Thanks, Tim, Mike, Steve. I noticed Kurt snuck in. Kurt, welcome. If you're ready for us, we're ready for you. If you want to take a seat up at the front, hopefully.
Kurt?
So we've got some folks on the phone as well as in the room. Thanks for making the time, as usual. So we've got a couple topics for you that I think we want to go through, maybe starting with the RAA, just where we are with that, and then maybe just talk about new GTLDs as well. So two small, lightweight topics for us today.
I don't know how to really start the discussion about the RAA. Where do we think we are? I think the uncertainty for ICANN in this is that we're talking to a small group of registrars, a core group that's even really smaller, and so that have really dedicated a lot of time to being on calls. Volker's on the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning all the time. I guess we want to understand that what's happening in those negotiations reflects, how does it reflect the sense of the registrar stakeholder group, and so where we are on paper, where we have agreements on paper, which is in a substantial number of areas, reflects the, I don't know if it's the consensus of the registrars or agreement of the registrars or, you know, or what process that is that gets from our paper writings where we agree to endorsement by the stakeholder group.
Okay, yeah, we'll start a queue. I've got James for now. Anyone else?
It's just a dull topic, apparently. So quickly, a request. ICANN staff put out their draft RAA as well as a number of supporting materials, and registrars have since responded with some edits as well as some supporting materials. Yours went out on the ICANN announcement page, ours went out on our constituency page, and we've been blogging and tweeting it and everything. But is there at least a way to get the link to that registrar constituency page containing those materials out through the ICANN announcements? I think that more folks want to see that, and in the interest of balance, I think it would be good to have both sides going out through the same channel.
Yeah, maybe we can make an announcement about the workshop that we did here and put it on the announcement page and use that for an agreed reason for creating like a collection page to put links to all those things.
From that works, or linking to where they live now, or either of those is fine.
Okay.
Yeah, Greg. Elliot, thank you.
Yeah, Kurt, I was wondering, one of the things that I think in our conversation with was exciting to hear a representative from LEA talking about the progress that we've made in the public session. I think it was gratifying because we have made a lot of progress. And I was interested in what you've been hearing about whether or not, a lot of the progress that we have been made in some of the 10 places where there's a lot of agreement, given the complexity of the issues that remain with verification and retention, whether it makes sense to kind of take home some victories on those points and kind of move forward, or not, and try to get the perfect. But I'm wondering what you've been hearing in the conversations you've been having since you showed up.
Yeah, gratefully little. So are you suggesting that we harvest the agreements we have and publish an agreement with those and keep going, or are you saying that we use the, court of public opinion here to help us say that significant progress has been made?
I guess I was interested in what you'd heard from people. I gave two data points as to what I'd heard, at least in the public session and then in the kind of less public but still public session that we had, the engagement that we had with LEA folks. And you talk to a lot more people than I do, so I thought you may have some additional insight.
Yeah, you'd be amazed who I don't talk to. I haven't heard that much, and I don't know. My life at ICANN anyway is based on hearing criticism or negative comments. I think that we should take what we heard from law enforcement, because we heard a couple versions of how we could go about verification. Pick one that's amenable and see if we can go back to them and say, okay, this is what we heard you say. Let's close on this. I don't know. I think there's some goodwill about what's going on and where we are right now, and maybe we can get to, you know, an agreement on what would be adequate for who is verification that would carry the day and then close it.
Yeah, Elliot.
Kurt, I want to go to a couple form issues to maybe, so I'll say I'm speaking for myself, you know, because I thought both James and Gray were polite on a couple things. You know, if you think your life at ICANN is about taking criticism, you know, I should, you know, try and be a registrar for a meeting, because if you can believe it, it's worse. So for us, or for me, I think that one of the most frustrating things about this negotiation, and you know, I hate that you have to be the one to hear this, and you know, I always, you know, find you do a noble job of the pincushion role. You know, for us, one of the frustrations is, you know, that it feels like it's not just law enforcement or GAC or intellectual property who are beating down on us, but it's really appeared to me in the last, the last rounds of negotiation, that it's staff that's beating down on us, and that manifests itself in a bunch of the extraneous—no, I won't say extraneous—but in a bunch of the staff-specific mandates or points or elements that have come into the agreement with very general, deeply scary language. And so once we see that, and it feels like staff's against us too, well, now there's a couple other problems. You know, it does feel like that posting of the agreement was negotiating in the court of public opinion against us. Bad form. Bad form. We should be in this together. And it does feel, in the tenor of the negotiation, as if when staff is taking a position, they're justifying it on the basis of law enforcement forces us to, or the board says. And, you know, a lot of that stuff, Kurt, just ain't so. And so, you know, if you really, really, no, you, if staff really, really wants to get this over the finish line, you know, I've been involved in a lot of negotiations in my life, and generally, when there's not a spirit of trust and good faith in the negotiation, it is not successful. And I would say to you that right now, that ain't the way it feels. So, I mean, I really encourage you to look at some of those form issues, because they're distasteful. And I'm happy to go offline and go deeper and be specific about some of that stuff. But it's crappy. Thank you.
So to me, this has been, I've been through a lot of negotiations too. And this has been one of the most confusing, difficult ones. And to me, difficult because it's confusing. I don't know how to negotiate away from the law enforcement, you know, asks or a third party without getting some buy-in. And the way we're approaching the sort of the recrafting of what's policy and what's not, and how we amend the agreement in the future, I don't know. So to me,
you've mixed two points, though. So let me put a finer point on what I'm saying, because that's a bit away from it. You know, the first is that staff has introduced a bunch of additional, very contentious points for registrars. So when that happens, all of our energies are moved away from these already incredibly complex issues of verification and validation. So now that's just mucked things up. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that is in and of it's a staff only position. It ain't a board position, it ain't an LEA position, it ain't an IP position, it's a staff position. And that's very complex to introduce into these negotiations. And the second point is, you know, I mean, one thing that I do in a negotiation is I don't enter into it unless I'm dealing with the decision maker. So you can say what you said about LEA. I can sympathize with it. But at that point, get out of the way. You know, because you know, I think what we should be doing together is identifying that these are incredibly complex issues that are not necessarily amenable to a short path solution, other than, you know, one that is slightly feel good but introduces a lot of damage in other ways. And we're not working together on that. What we're being done is, this. My boss is telling me this. I can't, and you can never successfully conclude a negotiation like that. So, that's all about tenor and form, right? So, you got to take this stuff on. You staff have to take this stuff on.
Yeah. So I didn't think I was mixing two issues, because some of that complexity led to the introduction of some of the big term that we're not mentioning that we find so onerous, but that is all linked in with how the registrar has changed the agreement and taking a lot of things out of policy development. So to us, a lot of those things are linked, and that's how they came about. So one problem I have with a negotiation is that, I talk to Volker and Matt a lot, and nobody else, and I don't know and 90% of it's over the phone. So another part of this I would like to see is, one, participation of more registrars at the table, and two is at least from doing some face to face. It's the discussion over the phone, especially about these really hard things, just boils down to, well, here's our idea for addressing this. Well, we hate that. And there's no discussion of why something's there. It's been really tough, because there's been a low number of registrars, and there's no face-to-face discussion.
Just one point I want to add for you to think about in that regard. Look, I think that these guys have done a really good job of coming back to the constituency as much as possible. I'm not saying you're not saying they do. I mean, I don't feel like, you don't want to be dealing with the herding of cats in that negotiation. I wouldn't if I were you. The second is, I don't think you can compare the number of times that, at least what I'm hearing, when we're being told, sorry, we can't talk about this, that's somebody else's position. I think there's very, very few circumstances where we're putting that out. So, I think that issue, which is always frustrating in negotiation, is overwhelmingly coming from you guys, not from us. Board says we have to. LEA says we have to. And by the way, when we go back channel on those things, they are more often than not incorrect. So now you guys come to the table with broken credibility on that stuff. And that's just, that makes it all just look like a negotiating tactic.
So I've got James and Christian.
Okay. Thanks, Matt. So I'll put a real fine point on it. Revocation, I heard yesterday, I think that it was characterized as a compliance tool. Now I'm hearing, I think it's linked to something we're asking relative to policy. Where is this coming from, and what's the justification for that ask? And bottom line, I don't get that. I can't follow what's being said versus that being included in the draft.
So I'm not the best one to answer that. It comes from it stems from, I believe, the process for changing the RAA, and we're going to get policy development in the GNSO out of that. And so if there come a set of circumstances where the agreement needs to be reformed in some way and the GNSO path isn't available anymore, there's a path for reforming it.
Well, I will concede that tearing up the agreement is changing the agreement.
Yeah, Christian, and then Gray.
I wanted to take the chance to tell you that although it might look that there are only two or three people talking to you, that's not true, because we have a tremendous amount of discussions going on in the Registrar's Constituency Group. And I personally have the feeling that it's actually good for you to talk only to two or three people, because I would actually personally shout to you, because I have so many, weird thoughts about what's going on here. Many of the suggestions, let's say that way, are so not understandable for me. The things which are so US-centric, especially, things which conflict with foreign from your point of view, foreign, but for me, my governmental data privacy rules, suggestions like we should check addresses like this and that, where half in the world it wouldn't be even apply. And then the guys who do the negotiation team says to me, well, it's our task to tell the ICANN staff about foreign laws. And even the law enforcement guys, you know. I told that I had spoken to some Interpol guy in, where was it, Los Angeles, I think. And he made some suggestions what he wanted to have. And I talked to him and he said, you know, this is not allowed in Germany. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, really? And now, I mean, he was from Interpol, even European. Mm-hmm. So are we the guys to teach you and the law enforcement what the laws are and what you can do and what you can't? So actually, I'm sometimes really mad, and I'm happy, and I think you should be happy too, that this is channeled through some more decent guys than I am, or Elliot is, maybe. and they are a bit more calmed down about this. But be sure that everything they say is discussed in a quite broader group of people.
I think that was a compliment. Thanks.
Not to me,
Ethan. Well, yeah. I've got the mic, though. I've got Gray and Joyce. Gray.
Yeah, so help me, because I'm just a little bit confused, because I thought James posed a great question. And it was about the revocation as a solution for the inability of a GNSO policy development process to work. And I guess help me, because I'm that kind of suggests some. The thing it would suggest to me is that we're contemplating getting rid of the GNSO. We're contemplating the fact that we've just decided that the existing policy development process is so broken that it shouldn't be used, and that we're going to create a new mechanism that circumvents it. And I can't imagine that I've got to be wrong on that. But that's kind of what it evoked in my mind, that we create this alternative tool where we can just tear up the contract and kind of get something new. So help me understand how that works.
I'm not sure. What I was saying is that in the new amendment process, which isn't quite done yet, but appears to be done, in the old contract, there's an amendment process that involves the GNSO creating amendments and then essentially creating any amendment they want and voting 2/3 and having it approved. So we're getting rid of that, and we're changing the process to make it a registrar approval of amendments.
So how does that have to do with revocation then? How does that factor into that?
So there's some mechanism for reforming the contract. I don't really want to have a contract negotiation here because
I'm just trying to understand how they get connected. Yeah. That, and I think goes to James' point, because we're interested in that.
Exactly. Where did it come from?
It came from that. It came from creating an ability to revisit the contract if the market conditions change and it doesn't make that form of agreement doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah, who did it come from?
Oh, it came from ICANN.
And again, just a reminder, two reminders to everyone. Number one, what was posted is a draft. So we're still, like I said yesterday or Saturday, whatever day it was, that there's stuff obviously that we want taken out of the draft, and there's stuff maybe that will end up in the draft. So I agree. I don't want to get into a back and forth specifically about things that when we get a final quote-unquote negotiated RIA that hopefully will be out of there from our standpoint. The other reminder is we do have folks on the phone, so when you're speaking, please make sure to state your name so folks on the phone know who you are. So I've got Joyce and I've got Jeff. Joyce.
Yeah. I don't know what ICANN's contract with the government or with any other departments are, or what kind of obligation that ICANN has. But the way that we are under so much pressure from the law enforcement, the LEAs, I'm kind of surprised. I also have the question that is ICANN really required to listen to all the department from the government? So next time if the Department of Agriculture comes in and say that you got to have this compliance issue, you got to have that compliance rules to put in, is ICANN going to listen into them and then put it into the part of our contract, our compliance? And it's the way that it's going is really scary, because yesterday that I heard that the registrants say that they're the one that own the domain name, so that they should have last to say in terms of the compliance issue and everything. So that makes me think that if you own a GM car or a BMW car and you buy the car from the dealer, so you should have something to say with the contract the dealer signed with the manufacturer. I always believe the contract is between two parties that the sign put the names on, but our registrar contract with ICANN is under so much influence, so much impact, so much pressure from every walk of the society. Everybody wants to have a say about this compliance, this contract. And I can understand and sympathize ICANN's position that they have to take so much pressure. And I just hope that ICANN can stay firm and just make sure that that the contract is really a contract, but not under so much influence from the other party. I understand that open organization, ICANN is open to the public comments and everything, but when it comes to the last words put in on the paper, we have to really be careful about that. That's just my comment.
Thanks, Joyce. I've got Jeff, McKaylee, and Elliot. Jeff.
Thanks. Jeff Eckhouse here. So as a member of the negotiating team as well, I can sense your frustration, Kurt. So I have a question for you. You stated, you know, that ICANN has this issue that you don't know how to get past the law enforcement recommendations, and, you know, they have asked for these 12, and, you know, how do we get past those recommendations and I guess you could say the demands that they have. And you've heard from people here that what we're hearing from law enforcement is different, and, you know, that sort of back-channel talk. So you have all the registrars in the room here, you know, not just the small group and the negotiating team. What do we need to do here as registrars? You have this whole group. What do we need to do to move that ball ahead? Because we're stuck at this point where, you know, you're saying, you know, you have this limited power in the negotiation because you have these demands, and we're saying, hey, we're hearing different things and we want to do it. You have the main group. What do we need to do to move the ball ahead and get past that point? I mean, help us, you know, what does it help us help you? I mean, what do we need to do to close this? Because, you know, we all don't want to spend, you know, our 8 hours on our phone calls and getting all the abuse for not having something done. So let us know.
Yeah, I think if there's an opening from this meeting or a change, it's, you know, we try to take advantage in some way of what was said during the topic and what Benedict said about his model, and say, okay, we'll, you know, take elements of Benedict's model and back off of the verification request from Bobby somewhat, and here's a plan, and try to sell that. And I was talking to Becky last night about, you know, trying to take what was said here and say, okay, this is what we heard, let's close.
Yeah, thanks. I've got McKaylee, Elliot, and then I'm going to put myself in the queue. McKaylee.
Thanks. Couple of things. Just with respect to the community's expectations with next steps and moving forward on this, because we went back several months ago, I think certain false expectations were set by everybody with respect to the timelines for these negotiations. And it would be helpful to understand, Kurt, what you and ICANN staff's position is on this, so we're all on the same page, because the last thing we need now is for people to be suggesting that a particular timeline exists or doesn't exist, but just so we actually know where you're at with that. The other thing as well is the outgoing CEO made certain statements with respect to the outcomes of these negotiations whilst they're still ongoing. Personally, I view that as something which was done in very, very bad faith, and I would hope not to see that kind of thing in the future.
Can you? I didn't understand the last comment.
The outgoing CEO, and just so we're clear, that's Rod Beckstrom as opposed to any of the other CEOs that are floating around this meeting, made several statements in public interviews with respect to the outcomes of these negotiations. In other words, certain changes. That the problem is, it's an ongoing negotiation. Therefore, from my view, I can't obviously speak to the other registrars. I can't speak for all the registrars. I'm going to speak for myself. That, to me, I view as being incredibly bad faith. I mean, it is one thing for somebody to say we would like to see certain things or whatever. That's fine, but if kind of making out that you've actually already got that as the end game, to me, is not particularly clever. Again, there's been a few things that have kind of popped up somewhere with it towards the end of the current kind of round of negotiations that were never discussed previously, that weren't in the prioritization that we did about 2 years ago, and some of them, to be perfectly honest, they really have to go. I mean, this obligation for DNSSEC on all registrars leaves me scratching my head and bashing my head against the keyboard, as has already been mentioned by one or two of the European registrars. We really feel that a lot of this stuff is incredibly US-centric, and we would like to remind you that the internet is international. It is not the US net, it is the internet, it is international, and you need to be sensitive and to the fact that under European law we have obligations, and you need to stop floundering around with this. You need, if you're not clear on it, put a formal request in to the European Commission, put a formal request in to European governments. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Just one quick point of clarification for the folks on the phone. Stefan Van Gelder has joined us and does have a seat at the table. So, Stefan, welcome. Thanks for gracing us.
Thanks. Kurt, small point from yesterday's dialogue around the negotiation. You know, the screed from PayPal was both passionate and surreal. So one of us went up to Mr. PayPal, I think his name was Bill Smith, but I just don't want to get it wrong, afterwards, and suggested, you know, these are great points. You know, can I now negotiate my end-user agreement with PayPal with you? To which he, of course, demurred rather quickly. So, I mean, it was fascinating to watch somebody call for something, and at one point even say, I'm speaking for PayPal. You want me to speak for PayPal? Which you rightly just looked back and didn't shake your head yes or no. But, you know, purported to speak for PayPal when the last thing in the world that a large, with a dominant market position, by the way, you know, a company would do would be to negotiate, you know, bring third parties into their negotiation. So, you know, I really found that deeply discrediting of that whole line. Thanks.
Thanks, Elliot. I had put myself in the queue. Kurt, the question that I had was, you know, what we've said was we're going to negotiate the contract, and once we've got a negotiated agreement, anything that doesn't get in there that falls out of that, we'd go through the PDP process at the GNSO. And that could be a fairly long list of items. So do you have any thoughts as to how we might attack that and prioritize that stuff and push it through the process?
Attack the PDP process?
Yeah. So anything that we don't get into the contract goes through the PDP.
So, why are you asking that? Are you asking that about a specific registrar asked that, or?
Yeah. So my understanding was that the board resolution was go and anything that we don't get in the contract goes to a PDP. And so have we, and it's a collective question. We collectively thought about, do we just hand that stuff to the GNSO and say, okay, we're.
You know, I'm not sure. I think we moved to characterize the board request, which was a little vague, as pending the result of the negotiation because we thought it wouldn't necessarily be beneficial to have a PDP occurring in parallel with the negotiation, and so we sought to push it out and letting us finish. And so how that plays out afterwards, I don't know, but maybe Stefan can help.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. I don't know if I can answer your question, Matt, because there's no set process. What I expect to happen is that I know the GNSO Council is following these negotiations very closely, as are much of the community, obviously, and I expect we may see some motions after the end result of the negotiations, and that's the way it would happen. And obviously there's no way to predict who might introduce what, but it's very clear that there is a desire to get some of these points that we won't get into the negotiations into the PDP process.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan. Mason?
Yeah, I agree with Stefan that it's probably not easy to predict what the council is going to do, because I'm sure every councillor has his or her own idea about how that should happen. As a councillor, my concern is anything pertaining to registrar policy isn't viewed as a big omnibus PDP that would just be wildly complicated, take too long, further frustrate the community. Whatever PDP does arise from registrar implemented community policy needs to be within the picket fence and dealt with in a reasonable way that the council can actually manage the work, because the council is strained, to say the least, in terms of managing its own work. So, it's probably for this group, Stefan and Yoav and I from here to assist the council in its efforts to make sure it doesn't get it doesn't bite off more than it can chew.
Yeah, Mason, can I just add to that as well, that it's also up to this group to give its councillors clear direction. It's not only up to us three to determine the course of action and the reason you have GNSO Council representatives is to represent this group on the council, and we can establish a strategy together if we see motions coming up. And obviously this is all hypothetical, because so far, as Mason and I have just explained, there's nothing on the table, but if we do see something come up, then we should strategize together to see what we want to do.
Thanks, Stefan and Mason. We've got just about 4 minutes left. Kurt, any other topics, questions for the group here, or vice versa for the folks in the room or on the... Yeah.
Thank you, Matt. I have a very silly question, if you can excuse my knowledge regarding the WHOIS verification. Let's give you numbers and I just ask my question. In Africa continent, we have a penetration of the mobile operator of over 60% for the whole continent. The domain name and the address, the physical postal address, is less than 10% of identification. So the only way we can reach people in the continent is using cell phone in a market that represents 90%. While the penetration of prepaid card compared to postpaid is representing 98%. It means people get cell phones without physical address, and that's the only way you can reach them. The postal office have no way to get numbers to address people and give addresses. In that situation, how can you sort out the WHOIS verification process in terms of enhancement? It's really a tricky, tricky question in that environment, because physical address is very hard to address, and the cell phone is volatile. There is no identification in it. It's less than 10% of verification of IDs regarding the cell phone. If that issue have been discussed and sorted out in the WHOIS verification process.
Okay, I've got that point. Thanks very much, Mohammed.
Yeah, and I think that just speaks to the challenges that we've all had in trying to come to agreement on WHOIS verification. Joyce, you've got about 30 seconds.
Oh, okay, just one more question about the proxy WHOIS. I can eventually want to credit those proxy WHOIS providers. You know, I want to see that not anybody can just go there and say, hey, I need a real who is of this domain name, because we're talking about a lot of human rights abuses all over the world. You know, many part of the world, the countries that they would prosecute the domain owner that the website is criticizing the government or something. So I just don't want to see any government would ask their supporters, say, hey, go there and get who is information. So, and if the proxy service provider was subjected to this, any inquiry and then obligated to provide information, I think that would be very, very dangerous. That's just my opinion.
Great. Thanks, Joyce. Kurt, thanks as always for your time. Guys, we've got a 15-minute break, and then we've got Maggie and the contractual compliance team in at 11. So we'll meet back here in 15 minutes. Thanks.